About 14 months ago, a young political outsider and former investment banker, he fancied himself as a political player in France. He set up a centrist political party called En Marche, and he held high hopes of occupying the Élysée Palace. Hardly anyone took him or his movement seriously. But one seasoned observer of French politics did. Sophie Petter wrote an important article in The Economist magazine on Emmanuel Macron in April last year. Shortly afterwards, Sophie was a guest on Between the Lines. Here's me with Sophie from early May last year.
Well, I think if you were going to be a sort of rational and logical, you would say he doesn't stand a chance because it's certainly based on all precedent in French politics. There is no example of
anybody
doing anything
to explain Donald Trump, Sophie.
Exactly. And that's in a way why, you know, one has to at least entertain the possibility that it might happen. So I think, you know, sometimes things change. There is a sort of disruptive capacity to upturn politics, to play with social media, to play with, you know, a sort of yearning for something different, young people. And so I think one doesn't want to write it off, certainly not as an analyst looking at the situation.
Well, that was May 2016. Sophie Petter, the Paris correspondent on The Economist, on this show. Now, fast forward to last week, her cover story in The Economist read, Europe's saviour, with a photo of Macron walking on water. Sophie joins me now. Sophie, congratulations for catching the significance of Macron when hardly anyone else took him seriously a year ago.
Thanks, Tom. That was quite something to listen in. I'd forgotten about that interview we did. Yes, I mean, I suppose, you know, I was just looking at the very faint possibility that this could happen. You know, strange things were going on, weren't they, in 2016? And, you know, and there was an outside chance. But still, you know, it was a remarkable event. The fact that the French did sort of disregard every single political rule that has sort of governed them for decades.
Absolutely. I mean, you've talked about Macron's peaceful revolution in democratic politics. Just to recap, how do you account for this? I mean, start with his presidential election victory in May.
Yes, I mean, you know, he benefited from a bit of chance, a bit of the electoral system in France, which is a two-round election. So you have to come out top or second in the first round of voting, and then you go through to a runoff. So, you know, you don't need to secure a majority of votes in that first round. You just need to be in top or second place. And it really is a very tight race often for those two spots. So you can get through, and he did on 24%. So there is a bit of an advantage that he got from the electoral system. But I think much more importantly is he reflected a desire by French people to just sort of do something different, have someone different at the top, have a younger face who hadn't been kind of tarred by decades of politics like the other people running. And I think it was really that won the day. You know, let's make a fresh start. Let's elect someone who hasn't been in politics before, who hasn't run for the election before, reflects a new generation. And I think that's what won the election for Macron in the first place. But that was the presidential election.
So a rebuke to France's traditional political class, does that also explain why his party was so successful in the recent parliamentary elections?
I think so. And that was a far less obvious outcome. If you look at the presidential election, you're very much electing one man. The parliamentary election, a lot of analysts said, well, it's very different because, you know, you have an MP, he's in your constituency, you've known him for years. You're not going to just sort of vote for an unknown face who represents Mr. Macron's party. And therefore, there was a far less obvious a sort of wind behind him. But in fact, what happened was that the same phenomenon came into play. People just wanted a change and they wanted a different way of doing politics. You know, half of his candidates were women. A lot of them were people who had had nothing to do with politics in their life. There were entrepreneurs, there were firemen, there were farmers, there were teachers, there were, you know, all sorts of people representing different kind of bits of society who came and had applied to become candidates for the En Marche party. There was a big selection process. It was all done very fast in sort of a matter of weeks. I mean, really quite extraordinary. But, you know, you still didn't know if they were going to be elected, and they were. And he got himself a majority, a really quite significant majority. And that, I think, was almost as extraordinary as his own election at the presidential vote.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to think of global precedents here. Have we ever experienced anything like this in the Western world?
Well, I can't think of it. I mean, I suppose it takes me back. I was a correspondent in South Africa at the end of apartheid. It's that kind of a moment when, you know, an entire class, category, sort of, you know, generation of politicians just swept aside, and in come these newcomers who have had no experience before in democratic politics. And yesterday I was just at the Assemblée Nationale, the French Parliament, and, you know, there are all these guys literally walking around with kind of, you know, maps in their hands because they're looking for where is the National Assembly building. Yes. I mean, we're at that degree of sort of, I mean, it's incredibly refreshing.
But is there also a danger, though, Sophie, in overstating the significance of this? I mean, you have written, quote, the implications could be far-reaching and a case study in political change. But to be the devil's advocate here, how much legitimacy does Macron really have? I mean, after all, turnout, especially in these parliamentary elections, was a historic low, right?
That is a good point, and it is true. But if you look at parliamentary voting over the years, it has gone down. There's been a downward trend. The French tend to have very high turnout for their presidential elections, but because the parliamentary election comes straight afterwards, and each of those votes is a two-round vote, that is four Sundays during one season, the French are supposed to go out and vote. It's not compulsory to vote, but there is an expectation that they do. And after a while, I think, you know, there's a kind of fatigue that kicks in. So it's not necessarily a lack of legitimacy. Yeah. I think that his result was so unambiguous in terms of getting majority, and it was unambiguous in terms of being elected president, that you are not looking at really somebody who doesn't have legitimacy. I think there's been a very clear message sent in France this year, that is, they want to change, and Emmanuel Macron is the person they want to give a chance. You know, he might get it wrong. There's no guarantee he's going to succeed, but they want to give him a chance to do politics differently.
If you've just tuned in, you're on Between the Lines with me, Tom Switzer, and I'm chatting with Sophie Petter, the Paris correspondent from The Economist. Now, there's no question that Macron's success has been spectacular, but he does face some tough tests in power. One of the first key issues, of course, is the economy. France has a stubbornly high 10% unemployment rate. I think, as we've discussed before, it's something like 25% for people under 30. Now, how is he going to cut the high levels of unemployment and kickstart growth that is struck at about anywhere between 0 and 1%?
Well, I think on the employment front, he is going to pass in the next couple of months a piece of legislation, and the point of it is to try and sort of loosen up the rules about hiring and firing employees to try and encourage firms to take on staff, because there is a sort of very rigid labour market in France, and it means that once you've employed somebody on a permanent contract, it becomes not impossible, but difficult, complex. You often end up in the courts, and these decisions can take years to resolve if there's any kind of dispute about a dismissal, and this really does deter firms from employing people in the first place, and it also deters them from growing. So you have a kind of double negative effect on growth and on job creation in France. So the point of this piece of legislation is to try and loosen some of those rules up and therefore encourage job creation. Now, you know, he obviously needs a lot of growth. He needs a better growth environment. He has that in the Eurozone. He's lucky in the sense that things have begun to improve, so France will be able to benefit from growth elsewhere in Europe. And there is a confidence returning to France. I mean, France is actually in finally a kind of a little bit of an upturn on its own economy. So he is hoping that there is a kind of favourable environment and the legislation that he brings in that will be able to kickstart both the
economy and the 35-hour work week? Because that also discourages job creation, right? Is he going to change that?
Well, it does, and he has specifically said he's not going to change that, but what he is going to do as part of this jobs bill is to try and devolve a maximum amount of decision-making into firms. At the moment in France, a lot of the things like wage bargaining is done at sector or even national level, and then every firm that belongs to that particular industry or sector or branch has to implement those nationally negotiated agreements, and that makes it very difficult for firms to sort of become competitive or to negotiate their own deals. And what he wants to do is devolve that, so turn it on his head and let firms negotiate these things. So in a way, it's not changing the legislation about the 35-hour week, but it's making firms more able to negotiate a more flexible deal at a firm level.
Retirement age?
Now, he's not going to change that either. That may be a problem. He may find that that's difficult. What he wants to do instead is to kind of merge all the retirement regimes into one and give everybody a sort of single pension account. Now, this is a huge, huge reform. If he does it, it will take probably 10 years. He would need to be re-elected to put it into place. France is a, you know, fabulously sort of bureaucratic country, and the number of regimes is of a complexity you cannot imagine. And that means people are very lost in where they are with their pension rights. There isn't a sort of point system. They don't know where they are. They don't know what their rights are going to be. And it makes the mobility between firms, it is discouraged because people just fear that they're going to lose their rights if they switch jobs.
Okay, now to the extent that Macron is going to follow the Economist's playbook and embrace market reforms, surely that means that the unions and the French left are likely to hit the streets to paralyse the country as Macron tries to pass an economic reform agenda, right? Because that's happened in the past.
Of course it has. And every time any French leader in the past has engaged in any sort of sensitive reform, there's always been strikes and demonstrations. Mm. And I'm sure that there will be a share of those that will come in over the next few months. You have to look at the state of the left, though. The Socialist Party has been almost annihilated.
Isn't that fascinating?
In this election. It's an extraordinary phenomenon. Again, you know, it comes back to this idea of this being a case study in change. You know, the Socialist Party, it literally has a tenth of the MPs it had in the previous parliament. It has lost 90% of its seats. It's
so the party of Mitterrand is essentially no more.
It's almost non-existent. If you go to their headquarters, the place feels like a kind of mortuary. It really is extraordinary. So, you know, that is not a party that's going to be leading people onto the streets. The unions are, you know, they don't feel the wind is with them either, but there will be demonstrations, yes. And up to a point, you know, Macron needs to have a little bit of a kind of showdown to show whether he's got the strength to take them on and continue. But he was elected. He has a mandate to do this. And he was very clear from the beginning what he was going to do about the labour market and about these market reforms. So, you know, if public opinion is behind him, then I think he has a chance of facing down the protest.
Okay, and what about the Conservatives in France? To what extent are they damaged goods as a result of all these elections?
Well, the Conservatives have actually come out better than all the other parties. They've got over 100 MPs in Parliament, and they are going to be the official opposition. For them, you know, if you took them back to the beginning of the year and you said, would you be happy with that situation? They'd have said absolutely not. They thought this was going to be the election they were going to win, both the presidency and the parliamentary. They haven't, but they've got a big group in Parliament, a very significant, serious group, and they will be the opposition to Macron. So it's a complicated time for them because they've lost some of their own party to his. He has drawn away, including the new Prime Minister, Edouard Philippe, who is from the centre-right Republican Party. So he's a Conservative, but he's working with Macron. So there are some sort of complicated dynamics going on between those who've defected and those who haven't. But
what about Le Pen's movement? Is that over for now?
No, it's not over. And again, she's got 8 deputies in Parliament and she only had 2 in the outgoing Parliament. So she's done pretty well. But it's a question of expectations, isn't it? You know, she thought there was a chance she could be elected president. So ending up with 8 MPs isn't much of a compensation for that.
Yeah.
I think that she will be in Parliament, though. Don't forget, you know, she wasn't an MP in the outgoing Parliament. So during debates on every piece of legislation, you know, day in, day out, you know, her appearance in Parliament will be noticed. She will continue to be a player. But she doesn't have the numerical strength to cause real trouble.
You know, Sophie, you get the impression when you read the international press that European Union grandees in Brussels are congratulating themselves for checking the rise of populist and insurgency movements on the continent, most notably Le Pen's movement. But here's a question to wrap things up. Surely the conditions that help give rise to the likes of Le Pen, you know, a stagnant economy, restive Muslim constituencies, they haven't disappeared. So if Macron doesn't kickstart this economy over the next 5 years, if there are, for example, more instances of Islamic terror attacks across France, surely Le Pen's movement will be a force to be reckoned with in 5 years' time.
I think that's right. And I think that's probably the greatest risk, you know, that France remains a very divided country. We have seen that this year. There are people who do not participate or in any way identify with Macron. And if he doesn't succeed in getting things right on the economic front, in bringing down the jobless rate, and especially getting young people into work, then I think you are looking at, you know, the potential revival of the National Front or some other kind of extreme force, possibly on the far left, in 5 years' time as a reaction to his failure to change things. But he is conscious of that. He knows what the stakes are. He is very aware that he needs to beat down extremism with results. That's what his plan is all about. And that's why he's moving so fast right now to try and do something about the economic reform program. So, yes, it's not a done deal yet. He knows the stakes are high and the risk has to be there that things could turn sour for him 5 years. But we're not there yet.
And finally, have any climate scientists taken up Macron's offer to move to France?
He made that offer in English, especially to American scientists. He was very keen to have them after Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris climate deal. But I don't know if anyone has actually come here. But I can tell you one thing, Tom, and that is that there is just a very different mood here in Paris. There is a sense that things are changing. And, you know, that people might, especially French people, might even come back. A lot of them have moved to London, New York, San Francisco, and other places. You know, they may come back to France and feel that France has got a future again. Well, and that's quite something.
What an amazing story. And more power to you for catching the significance of it 14 months ago. Sophie, thanks so much for making time for us today.
It's been great to speak to you. Thanks very much, Tom.
Via Skype, Sophie Petter. She's the Paris correspondent for The Economist.